There are a lot of things that we find in life that we can modify, we can change, we can disrupt. We are all thankful for air conditioning, especially in the state of Florida. What we've effectively been able to do is to change the weather from being as hot and humid on the outside to something comfortable. Sometimes we even turn the fans on and freeze people out, but we can modify, we can change, we can do a lot of different things. Travel by automobile, we do it now with a lot more comfort. I watch a lot of Gunsmoke, and I do think about riding horses and wagons, and I'm thinking, you know, that looks kind of fun. I don't think I'd want to do it more than 2 days. You know, flying is defying the law of gravity. We can change things, and we can modify things. And that's because that the wisdom of man has afforded him the ability and many disciplines to change and to modify and to do things. But as smart as we are, putting man on the moon, putting little pieces of metal on the planet Mars, sending things out in the deep blue sea and things like that, there are a lot of things that we cannot do. I find it humorous that people talk about, well, we're going to try to change the weather. And they have actually made attempts of doing that. There have been those who have tried to create ways to stop hurricanes. Yeah, good luck on that. There was a scientist some years ago, I have an article in my office, that he decided in his infinite wisdom that we needed to blow the moon up. It just wasn't effective. And, you know, I mean, it's kind of silly things like that. It's like you're going to drain the ocean, really. The things that we cannot change. We'd like to be able to stop earthquakes. And we've done a lot to be able to say we think one's coming, but, you know, we don't know when it's going to happen. And tragedy fell last week, I think, when there was a volcanic explosion, killed a bunch of people. They didn't know it was coming. There's just some things we can't change. There's just some things that we just don't know. And I think God's sense of humor, if I may say so, and I apologize for those who are dealing with it, but the common cold, we can't cure that thing. It just keeps hanging on, and God says, watch this, I'm going to give you the common cold. And it's, you know, we cannot change a lot of things. Disease and of course, death will never be eradicated. There are actually people that have spent billions of dollars in quite serious observations of trying to find a way to not die. And you just want to look at them and smile and say, well, good luck on that. If I could borrow half of that, I could make more use to it than what you're going to do. The Apostle Paul said something in the city of Athens in Acts 17 that is very interesting about the nature of man. And he makes it in a world where it is filled with idolatry. They are worshiping everything known to man. They've got idols, and he's standing on Mars Hill. He's all around with idols. But he's trying to explain to these idol worshipers that there's a true God, and there's something you need to know about him. And what you need to know about him is that you can't change what he's established. In Acts 17 and verse 26, in your pew Bibles, page 1277, if you turn with me there, Paul says this, God has made, speaking of he, has made from one blood every nation of men to dwell on all the face of the earth. He has determined their preappointed times and the boundaries of their dwellings. We're all from one blood. Every one of us came from Adam. Every human being is related to one another. We are of the brethren of Adam. While we may have divided nationally and we are separated by generations and gender and all the different things that make us the unique people that we are, when you peel that onion and get to the core of it, every one of us come from Adam and Eve and we're related. And that's not going to change. And that's what he says here, is that God has made from one blood every nation of men, and that began at Adam. The second thing that is inferred by this passage, and we won't talk a lot about this, but the reality of it is that all men are going to dwell upon the face of the earth. Now, we could get into a long discussion about whether we're ever going to go inhabit the planets of things, and I know the Star Wars and those kind of things are sort of fanciful and kind of neat to do. That's never going to happen. And I'm not just saying that because I'm just an ignorant scholar of some kind. The Bible disproves that whole idea. Because again, he says here that God has determined our habitation. People often ask the question, well, is there life on other planets? And the answer is no. And there's one passage, not in your notes, but I can prove that with one passage. Is there life on other planets? No. Why? John 3:16. For God so loved the world that He gave His only begotten Son. If you assume for a moment, I'm getting off record, but if you assume for a moment that there are creatures living on different planets, that you're going to have to explain why the Son of God, who made those people, came and died on the earth and only died for us. But, I mean, that's a whole different argument. But the reality of what Paul is saying here is that, listen, this true God, we all come from one blood, and we dwell on the face of the earth. This is our habitation. And we are restricted because God has determined the pre-appointed times. He has determined the habitation. Physiologically, there is just a limit to what we can endure. I don't know what the Mach number is, you know, of what that might be. Mark may know, but yeah, I don't know. But there comes a time when you get to go too fast, you disintegrate. The whole beam me up, Scotty thing, with my luck, they wouldn't put me back together right anyway, because I haven't been put back together right anyway. But there's a limitation that we have as human beings. We just can't do that. We are made not to be nocturnal creatures. We're made to be creatures of the light. We're not made to live in the oceans because we don't have gills. We can survive in the ocean over a period of time. We can survive in space. I'm just saying that everything that Paul is saying here about our world is that this is the way of the Lord. This is how He has made everything. And that's what Solomon said in Ecclesiastes chapter 7 and verse 13. And while he is talking about the challenges of life and the realities of life, and the book of Ecclesiastes is about the realities of life. If you want a reality check about life, read Ecclesiastes. Because Ecclesiastes is a book that tells us, let me tell you something, life is hard, it is short, and in a lot of ways it's not fair. Get over it. That's what it's all about. And it's a reality check. And he talks about riches and the wealth and the people that get things, whatever. But in the midst of all of that, he makes this interesting statement in chapter 7 and verse 13. He says, I want you to do something. I want you to consider the work of God. For who can make straight what He has made crooked? Two things. We need to consider the work of God. And then secondly, we need to understand that man cannot change what God has established. He can mediate some ways, and He can disrupt, but in reality, He cannot change those things. I mean, we talk about the work of God. Think about things as we go back to the book of Genesis in the very beginning. This is on page 1. This is Genesis chapter 1. I mean, we talk about the creation. We talk about everything that's there, but let's talk about what God has ordained that man cannot change. In the very beginning, when the world was created, God spoke. That was pretty awesome. You know, God said something and it came into being. You and I can't do that. God, out of His mouth, said, let there be light, and there was light. That's how incredible His power is. But when God established things, He noticed in verse 6, on the second day there, it says that let there be a firmament in the midst of the waters, and let it divide the waters from the waters. Thus God made the firmament and divided the waters which were under the firmament from the waters which were above the firmament. And it was so, and God called the firmament heaven. And so the evening and the morning were the second day. Now we're just going to lay some groundwork here. The thing about the world is, there is an atmosphere made up of a lot of fierce things out there. But there is an atmosphere, and there's this planet. And that's never going to change. Now the pundits of science want to explain to us that somehow, and yes, it doesn't mean, and don't misunderstand me, that in this whole discussion that man can't kind of mess things up a little bit. We cannot destroy our atmosphere. Why? Because God made it that way. And He's established it. There is nothing in this world you and I can do that will ever destroy that atmosphere. Because God has ordained that it is going to be there, and it is there. As a matter of fact, in the same chapter, verse 9, He says that, let the waters under the heavens be gathered together into one place, let the dry land appear, it was so. And God called the dry land earth, and the gathering together of the waters He called seed. And God saw it was good, and God said, let the earth bring forth grass, the herb that yields seed, and the fruit tree that yields fruit, according to its kind, whose seed is in itself on the earth, and it was so. And the earth brought forth grass, the herb that yields seed according to its kind, and the tree that yields fruit, whose seed it is in itself according to its kind, and God saw that it was good. You know why? Living in Florida, no doubt you have, but if you go to the coast and you watch the tide, and you watch it come in and go out, and you watch the waves, I mean, never think that it never goes beyond that. it just basically stays right there, year after year after year after year after year. And if you go over, if you've lived in Florida and you have children, you have done, at least we did, I took so many field trips to St. Augustine, I was speaking Spanish by the third grade. But, you know, you think about Ponce de Leon when he landed and all the other conquistadors that came over. That land is still basically the same thing. It's still, we still have La Florida here. It hasn't changed. And I guess if you go back 3,000 years, it's still the same. Why? God ordained everywhere, somewhat changed in the flood, but God ordained that here's the waters, here's the seas, and here's land, and guess what happens on the land? Grass grows and trees grows. Why? Because that's God. We can't change that. We can modify that. But God has ordained that. Then think about in verse 14. This one just always awes me and just inspires me. Let there be light in the firmament of the heavens to divide the day from the night. Let them be for signs and seasons and for days and years. Let them be for lights in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth. And so it was so. And God made two great lights, the greater light to rule the day, the lesser light to rule the night. And he made the stars also. God set them in the firmament of the heavens to give light on the earth and to rule over the day and over the night and to divide the light from darkness. And God saw that it was good. Who put the sun up there? God did. Who put the solar system in its circular order where the sun is in the middle and we got all these little planets and we're the third one from the sun, the third rock from the sun? Who put that into orbit? Do you realize that that's been going on for thousands of years? Because however long you want to say the earth is, 10,000 years or so, the fact of the matter is that Adam and Eve stood there, looked up in the heavens and said, wow, that's a big bright thing up there. God said, that's the sun. That's the same one that you saw today. And tonight, when you go out, maybe it's in the morning, actually, because it was actually in the morning yesterday morning. So maybe about, what time were you? Weren't even there. I don't know. It was out there about 8 or 9 o'clock in the morning, and over here you have the moon up there in the sky, you know, the morning sky. That's the same one Abraham looked at. And the stars, the Pleiades, and the Big Bear, and the constellations, and the Milky Way. Do you realize that every human being that has ever lived has seen that? Every human being has seen the same sun and moon. Why? God ordained these things. And there's nothing we can do about that. And we are thankful that the earth is exactly a right distance from the sun. Because if we were any closer to the sun, it would not be Florida anymore. We would be dead. And if it was any further away, we would be dead. And if the moon was anywhere else that it is, we would be in a lot of trouble, in Florida particularly. I mean, this has been ordained. This is what God has established. And the thing that he's trying to tell us about this is, I want you to look at this and realize, this is my work. You can't change it. We can change the temperature inside the building, but the sun still shines. And it's still hot. And when it rains, it's going to rain. And we can't control the weather. We can't do any of those things. And that tells us that that's the way the world is created, because that's the way that God has established it. If you notice in verse 18, he says that these are going to rule, not man. You see, we haven't gotten our dominion yet. But dominion comes on the sixth day. God said, let the waters abound with an abundance of living creatures, and let birds fly above the earth across the face of the firmament of the heavens. And so God created great sea creatures and every living thing that moves, with which the waters abounded according to their kind, and every winged bird according to its kind, and God saw that it was good. God blessed them and said, be fruitful and multiply, fill the waters and the seas, and let the birds multiply on the earth. And so in the evening and the morning were the fifth day. We've got the animals, we've got the sea creatures and the birds on the fifth day, we got the land animals on the sixth day, and he made man. That's never going to change. Now, there may be some animals that are no longer around. The dinosaurs are not here. Guess who made the dinosaurs? God did. I don't know why that's a question. People think about dinosaurs. You know who made the dinosaurs? God did. Do you know what happened to the dinosaurs? Get your pencils out. Here it is. You know what happened to the dinosaurs? They died. They're extinct. And I'm glad, because some of them pickers were bigger than this building. And I don't know what you do with something like, you know, can I bring this home, Mom? No. I mean, God created everything, and all in His order. There are species today that go out of existence, but the oceans are still going to teem with animals. The world's still going to teem with animals, because that's what God has created. And we will notice also in this creation that He says that these creatures are going to reproduce after their kind. it is impossible with all the technology of man to cross-pollinate, if I can use that word, animals from one to another. And if it is ever done, then there is a sterilization that happens, but they cannot cross. You cannot cross one species of animals with another species. It's impossible. Why? Because you can't make straight what God has made crooked, and you can't make crooked what God has made straight. Why? Because that's the Word of God. And all of that just simply is saying is that God is trying to tell man, I'm going to give you a lot of intelligence, I'm going to give you a lot of abilities, but there's a lot of things that you're not going to be able to change. You know why? Because I'm the Creator. And no matter what we do, it will always be this way. Nothing's going to change that. Because God will not allow it to be changed. I mean, if we consider even some things that are more prevalent in the minds of a lot of people today, you know, that animals and men after their kind, there's that seasons are always going to be in place. You know, this whole thing about global warming is so, well, quite frankly, laughable, because the Lord has an answer for that. In Genesis chapter 8, you remember after the flood, and God's wiped out everybody and he's redone the earth and all of that. And about a little bit later after the flood started, and Noah's been floating around in that big box for 300 and something days, and he finally gets out and he builds an altar, and the Lord smells the altar, and then he puts that rainbow. You know what's kind of cool about the rainbow? It wasn't made in creation. The rainbow was not made in the... See, the trick question you ask people is, what day of the creation did God make the rainbow? Well, he didn't do it in that day. He didn't do it on the fourth day. He made the rainbow after the flood. But this is what he says in Genesis 8 and verse 20, that Noah built every clean animal and every clean bird and offered burnt offerings on the altar. And the Lord smelled a soothing aroma. And the Lord said in his heart, the Holy Spirit reveals it to Moses, I will never again curse the ground for man's sake, although the imagination of man's heart is evil from his youth, nor will I again destroy every living thing as I have done. While the earth remains, time and harvest, cold and heat, winter and summer, and day and night shall not cease. A couple of things. God has said, I will never destroy the world by flood again. Now, there's some bad floods that happen, and there's tsunamis that, you know, make a lot of damage and do all that, but the world will never see that kind of flood again, and we're thankful for that. But the other thing that he tells us is while the earth remains, there will be seed time and harvest. It could be a lot, it could be a few, but there's always going to be seed time and harvest. Will not change, that there will always be cold and heat. We are never going to go into what they may refer to as an ice age. We are never going to go into a period that we are just all burning up. But that is an impossibility. This whole nonsense about global warming is exactly that. Because it can't be done. Can we mess up some things? Sure, we can, you know. There's always going to be winter and summer. There's going to be four seasons in Florida. Green, light green, and lighter green. That's always going to be the case. No matter what happens. It's not going to change. And he says day and night. I think that's fascinating. Day and night will never cease. Why? That's the work of God. And what God has made crooked, you can't make straight. And what he has made straight, you cannot make crooked. And even beyond that, here's an interesting thought. Man will never be able to rule the earth as one empire. There will never be a time in the history of man that either an empire or a religion will take over the world and rule the world. No matter what that little white mice keeps trying to do, of trying to take over the world. It's never going to happen. It's been tried. And the reason is because in Genesis chapter 11, after the flood, and men began to populate and recreate and do all this, and there were lots of people on the earth, in chapter 11 and verse 1, the whole earth had one language and one speech. Fascinating. That with all of these thousands or millions of people, however many were living at this time on the face of the earth, that everybody spoke the same language. And they were of one speech. And it came to pass, as they journeyed from the east, they found a plain in the land of Shinar, and they dwelt there, and they said to each other, come, let's make bricks and bake them thoroughly. And they had brick for stone and they had asphalt for mortar. And they said, come, let's build ourselves a city and a tower whose top is in the heavens. Let us make a name for ourselves, lest we be scattered abroad over the face of the whole earth. But the earth came down to see the city and the tower which the sons of men had built. And the Lord said, indeed, the people are one. And they all have one language, and this is what they begin to do. Now, nothing that they propose to do will be withheld from them. Come, let us go down, speaking of the Godhead. Let us go down, and there confuse their language, and there may not understand one another's speech. And so the Lord scattered them abroad from there over the face of all the earth, and they ceased building the city. Therefore its name is called Babel, because there the Lord confused the language of all the earth. And from there, the Lord scattered them abroad over the face of all the earth. Now, whenever we talk about the Tower of Babel, we always emphasize the fact that, well, boy, that's where all the languages came from. We're speaking different languages. That was initially the response of God, but ultimately there was a higher purpose. You know why God did that? We have today something called the United Nations. It's really not. I remember even in high school, back in the Law of Moses, We did our own little United Nations sort of a thing. And it was fun that, we all got to pick a country and we all got to debate and we all got to... And you know what? Even as teenagers, we argued. And we fussed. And we disagreed. We said, no, you can't do that. And the funny thing about it is, while there's good to be done and things like that, there will never be an ability of man to be united together. You know why? Because we come from different cultures, we come from different languages, we come from different backgrounds. And one of the things that makes mankind so unique is that we're so unique. Because people in the world don't think like we do. People in the world don't react like we do. And everybody is so different. And what God did by dividing the world up by languages and by culture is that he effectively destroyed the ability of man to unite together as one. If you'll notice in the earlier chapter, in chapter 10, I may not have put that in your notes, but if you just sort of look back in chapter 10 and verse 5, from these the coastland peoples of the Gentiles were separated into their lands, everyone according to his language, according to their families, into their nations. Okay, everybody just split. Ham went south. Japheth went up into European area. Shem, he went east, off into China, and those kind of places over there. And then look down in verse 25. This is kind of neat. To Eber were born two sons. The name of one was Peleg, for in his days the earth was divided. I mean, we've talked about this before, but do you realize that over the period of time that man populated the whole earth, that they started basically in what we know as the Middle Eastern area, and they went and they began to move up into the European continent, and then they began to move down into the African continent, and then began to move over into India and over into Mongolia, China, and all like that. And then somebody had the bright idea to cross over into Alaska, and they discovered America. And then they began to populate down into North America and Central America and South America, and all the world started filling up. And then somebody got the bright idea, hey, let's get in the boat and go that way. And they did, and they found all kind of islands out there. Easter Island off of the coast of South America, it's been there for a long time, and people populated. And all of a sudden, you've got the world filled with everybody. Why? Because that was God's ordination. And yet, in all of that, man will never be able to rule the earth as one empire. God will not allow it. The Romans tried it. They didn't do it. They were the biggest empire that's ever been. Hitler tried it. The Japanese tried it. And I know some years ago there was a big fear. I heard even some of my brethren talk about, oh, Islam's going to take over the world. No, it's not. Why? Because you cannot make straight what God has made crooked. God will not allow anything to dominate his world without his authority. And that's pretty much what God was telling Job in Job 38 through 41. We're not going to read all that, but isn't that really what God is trying to say to Job? Who do you think you are? Who is this who darkens counsel by words without knowledge? Now prepare yourself like a man. I will question you and you shall answer me. Where were you when I laid the foundations of the earth? Tell me if you have understanding. Who has determined its measurement? Surely you know. Who stretched the line upon it? To what were its foundations fastened? Who laid its cornerstones? When the morning stars sang together and all the sons of God shouted for joy. And who shut in the sea with the doors when it burst forth and issued? And he goes on to talk about the creation. And he says, where were you, Job? When I did all that, when I made these animals, and when I did all these things, and he goes on and on and on and on. He basically said, let me tell you something, Job. You can't change anything. I have determined it. I have established it. It will not change. It doesn't matter what you think or what you say. It will not change. And Job learned that. Because why? We have to consider the work of God. There are things that we can change. There's things we need to change. But we also need to stand in awe of the reality that we live in a world that is by the dominion of God. He has established these things. They are for our benefit, and we can't change them by any stretch of the imagination. Well, but that also brings up the second question and the second statement. You cannot change the will of the Lord either. If you cannot make the crooked straight or straight the crooked or whatever it may be, what makes us think that we can change His will? Solomon asked the question, who can make straight what He has made crooked? This applies to the principles of God's work that we've seen in creation. But Solomon's conclusion is that a man has to accept the way of the Lord as the only truth, because that is the only truth. Psalm 119, the psalmist makes this observation in verse 89. Forever, O Lord, Your word is settled in heaven. You know what that means? If you wanted to change a law in Washington, D.C., you would hire Mr. Blake, and he would go to D.C., we'd call him Mr. Smith, and he could change legislation, and he could change whatever. Why? Because the authority resides in Washington, D.C. Did I get that right, I think? Okay. He'll be taking interviews following services this evening. But here's the thing. You can't go to heaven. You can't go to the dwelling place and say, hey, I want to change that. And I think that the language is so important of how it's crafted in this passage that, you know, forever, O Lord, Your word, you know, it's settled in heaven. You can't go there and change it, and I can't go there and change it. And so with that, then whatever God says, it's settled in heaven. End of story. Oh, we can try to modify those things. And yes, it's kind of like gravity. We can modify gravity, but after a while, that plane's got to land. Why? Because you can only defy it for so long. Because there is a law that is saying, this is unnatural. That's what I do not like about flying. It is unnatural. Lynette is wrong. And you can defy the law of God for a certain amount of time, but then you're going to crash. Why? Because there is a law that is established that my word is settled in heaven. Think about what has happened about men that have tried to do that. If you read the days of Noah, I mean, the reason that God destroyed the world is because man said, hey, I got a better idea than God. I want to do things my way. And so God comes to look at the earth during the days of Noah, and He says that the imaginations and the heart of man is only evil continually. Because they have rejected the will of God, they have rejected the word of God, they have rejected the way of God, and they have said, I want to do it my way. Well, God said, fine, go ahead. And when they got through, they had an absolute mess that they were filled with all kind of immorality and all like that, and God came and destroyed them, and it didn't change things. In 2 Chronicles, this is an interesting passage that is given in 2 Chronicles chapter 15. You'll need the page number on that one, but that's on 507. In 2 Chronicles chapter 15 and in verse 3, during the reforms of Asa, he makes this observation, 2 Chronicles 15 and verse 3, of the condition of Israel. This is what Israel did. They thought that they had a better idea. And so he says that for a long time, Israel has been without the true God, without a teaching priest, and without law. Well, boy, what a case that would be. They didn't worship the true God. They didn't have a teaching priest. They didn't have the law of God. So how'd that work out for you, Israel? verse 4. Well, they were in trouble. And when they're in their trouble, they turned to the Lord of Israel and sought Him. He was found by them. And in those things, there was no peace to the one who went out, nor to the one who came in, but great turmoil was on all the inhabitants of the land. I'm going to tell you, if you don't have God, you're going to have turmoil. If you don't have God, you're going to have a lot of trouble, and there's not going to be any peace. Why? Because God has ordained His will for man, for him to be happy. When we neglect the will of God, it is going to do nothing but bring misery. If you don't have God in your life, you do not have peace. You cannot have peace. It is not in man who walketh to direct his own footsteps, Jeremiah tells us. And that is a law. That's not an opinion. That's not an interpretation. That's a law. Because there are those who have tried to change it. Remember Abraham and Sarah. God comes to Abraham and says, you're going to have a son. He says, well, now, Lord, the only one I've got is Eliezer. God said, that's not him. A little bit later on, Sarah is having a conversation with Abraham and said, you know, God, I don't know what's going on here. I mean, we're kind of in our old age, and it's not going to happen, so I don't know if God knows what He's doing. So I tell you what, I'm going to give you Hagar, my handmaid. You go have a child by him, and that will take care of God's problem. And so Abraham goes in and has a child by Hagar. His name is Ishmael. Problem solved, right? No. That's not the promised son. The promised son was going to come through Sarah. And so even though Abraham and Sarah thought they had a better idea, it didn't work because that was not the plan of God. When Nadab and Abihu, who were the sons of Aaron, priests, decided, hey, fire is fire, doesn't matter what we're going to do, and they offered profane fire, God says, no, that's not what I prescribed. And He was so angry with them, He brought fire from heaven and destroyed them. Why? Because that was not His will. And I tell you something, even Moses. You know, these are great people. I mean, Nadab and Abihu, sons of Aaron. You got Abraham and Sarah. They're pretty high up on there. What about Moses? Remember what he did in Kadesh in Numbers chapter 20 and verse 7? God tells them, okay, they were thirsty. And He tells Moses, okay, take your rod. You and Aaron, get everybody together. You speak before the people, water's going to come out, and give them to drink. Moses was mad. He got them all together, and he took the stick and hit it on the rock, said, all right, here's your water. That wasn't what God said. He struck the rock twice with his rod. Water came out abundantly. Then the Lord came to him in verse 12 and said, because you did not believe me to hallow me in the eyes of the children of Israel, therefore you shall not bring this assembly. You know what that tells me? Even if you're Moses and you disobey God, that's not my will. Why? Because you can't make crooked what's straight and you can't straight what's crooked because the word of the Lord is settled in heaven and you can't change that. As a matter of fact, if an angel came tonight and stood here and said, hey, I want to tell you something. If it's anything different than what you've got in your Bible, let him be anathema. Let him be accursed. Paul says that even if we, as the apostles, or an angel from heaven, if an angel of heaven comes and preaches any other gospel, let him be anathema. Here's the deal. Angels can't make straight what God has made crooked. Angels cannot make crooked what God has made straight. Why? The word of the Lord is settled in heaven. Doesn't change. Look at the sun and the moon. Has it changed any? No. Stars, still the same. Animals, seed, the whole thing. And what Solomon is saying is that what God has made crooked, man cannot change. And that's fundamentally the problem that man has with this whole thing about the Word of God. Because he thinks that he can change the will of God. And he can't do that without consequences. Because there are three basic things. This is a very short list, of course. But there are some things that are just very key to this understanding of you cannot change the will of God. Jesus said in John 14:6, I am the way, I am the truth, and I am the life. No one comes to the Father but by me. That's just as certain as the distance from here to the sun. It is just as certain as everything that has been created by God. As long as the earth will stand, that stands. It will not change. You can modify it. You can try to change it. And it's going to do nothing but cause a lot of problems and chaos, which is obviously in our religious world today, of people believing that you can come to the Father any other way. It will not change. Jesus is the only way we're going to get to the Father, and that's not going to change. And Mark 16 and 16 says that he that believeth and is baptized shall be saved, and he that believeth not shall be damned. That hasn't changed in 2,000 years. And if God allows us to live another 2,000 years, it's still not going to change. Why? That's the Word of God. I mean, sometimes I'm talking to people, we just need to emphasize the fact that, let me tell you, that's the book. That doesn't change. And the reality of judgment, it is appointed unto man once to die. Nobody in this room is going to be saved from death. Only by the exception of the coming of the Lord. But folks, that's death too. But you and I are going to die one day. That's not a maybe. That's not, it might not happen. It's going to happen. Why? Because the sun rose today and the moon rose and the stars and animals run around. Why? Because that's the will and the law of God. And so we go back to the book of Job. We bring our lesson to a close. And we, you know, Job's a great book to learn about some of these things as well. But Job says, now ask the beast, and they will teach you, and the birds of the air, and they will tell you. Speak to the earth, it'll teach you, and the fish of the sea will explain it to you. Who among all these does not know that the hand of the Lord has done this? In whose hand is the life of every living thing and the breath of all mankind? Does not the ear test words and the mouth taste its food? Wisdom is from aged men, and with length of days, understanding. With him are wisdom and strength. He has counsel and understanding. If he breaks a thing down, speaking of God, if he breaks a thing down, it cannot be rebuilt. If he imprisons a man, there can be no release. If he withholds the waters, they dry up. If he sends them out, they overwhelm the earth. With him are strength and prudence. The deceived and the deceiver are his. He leads counselors away plundered. He makes fools of the judges. He loosens the bonds of kings and binds their waist with a belt. He leads princesses away plundered and overthrows the mighty. He deprives the trusted ones of speech, takes away the discernment of the elders. He pours contempt on princesses and disarms the mighty. He uncovers deep things out of the darkness and brings the shadow of death to light. He makes nations great and destroys them. He enlarges nations and guides them. He takes away the understanding of the chiefs of the people of the earth and makes them wander in a pathless wilderness. Open the dark without light, and he makes them stagger like a drunken man. God has his way, and it will not change. What has God done for you and me? Well, we're thankful that he hasn't changed this either, because he gave us his son, and that hasn't changed either. What is man that you're mindful of him? Well, the son of man that you take care of him. You made him a little lower than the angels, crowned him with glory and honor, set him over the works of your hands. You put all things in subjection under his feet. For in that he has put all in subjection under him, he left nothing that is not put under him. But now we do not yet see all things put under him, but we see Jesus. Thank God he hasn't changed that. Who is made a little lower than the angels, but the suffering of death crowned with glory and honor, that he, by the grace of God, might taste death for everyone. That's what God did. He established his world. He established his will. And this is the way of the Lord for you and me. Jesus tasted death for you and for me. And it's not going to change, no matter what happens. The grace of God is given. The grace of God is extended. And what Solomon said is, accept the way God does things, for who can straighten what he has made crooked? We need to accept the will of God and accept the offering of his son for the salvation that he offers, because that's what he's given us, and thank God for that. Would you not do that this night, as together we stand, as we sing?